But you'll see in a moment we're going to have our Bible reading in a slightly different form to usual. But I want to just encourage you as we listen to what's to come, what is it that you notice about the Shunammite woman? Okay, this is the one woman in the series who doesn't even have a name, okay? The Shunammite woman that we're about to encounter, what is it that you notice about her that we might be wanting to kind of learn from in this series on women in the Bible? Okay, so over to Sue and others.
Yeah, we've got two parts. So is that the second part I need?
He's after the first part.
Well said. Well, good morning, everyone. You're watching the Shunam Breakfast Show, and we're in this cosy, even bijou extension to the home of this woman and her husband, and along with this holy man of God, Elisha. I understand you two met some years ago. This story started some time ago. How did all that happen?
Well, the first time I came to Shunma, I met this lady. And she talked me into stopping here for a meal. And it became my custom. Every time I came through, I stopped for a meal.
Whoa. Were they good meals?
Oh, yes, definitely.
You enjoyed them.
That's why I came back.
Wonderful hospitality, wasn't it? But that's not all. How did this extension of your home come about?
Well, I said to my husband, I'm certain that this man who stops by with us all the time is a holy man of God. So it was my idea to add on this room and furnish it with a bed, a desk, a chair and a lamp so that he could stay with us when he came by.
Yes, and it was wonderful to stop by, lay down and have a nap.
I'm sure it was. But do you think this couple went far beyond the call of duty in providing you with all this hospitality?
Oh, yes. That's why I asked her if we could do for her, as she seemed, what we could do for her, she seemed very satisfied. But she said, I even asked her if we could perhaps ask the king or the commander of the army if they could do something for her. But she said, no, she was content with her family. However, my servant had an idea. She had no son. In fact, no children at all. And as I thought about it, I believed I could promise her that she would have a son.
And I remember saying, don't play games with me, teasing me with such fantasies. But it happened. I had a son, and he grew up. A wonderful boy, but...
Thank you. Let's leave it there for the moment. There's still far more to tell of this family story, and we'll return to it in a moment. And now we'll have the second part.
Some years later, at harvest time, the boy went out one morning to join his father, who was in the field with the harvest workers. Suddenly, he cried out to his father,
"My head hurts! My head hurts!"
The father said to the servant,
"Carry the boy to his mother."
The servant carried the boy back to his mother, who held him in her lap until noon, at which time he died. She carried him up to Elisha's room, put him on the bed, and left, closing the door behind her. Then she called her husband and said to him,
"Send a servant here with a donkey. I need to go to the prophet Elisha. I'll be back as soon as I can."
"Why do you have to go today? It's neither a Sabbath nor a new moon festival."
Then she had the donkey saddled and ordered the servant,
"Make the donkey go as fast as it can and don't slow down unless I tell you to."
So she set out and went to Mount Carmel, where Elisha was. Elisha saw her coming while she was still some distance away and said to his servant Gehazi,
"Look, here comes that woman with Shunamma. Hurry to her and find out everything, if all right with her. Her husband and her son."
She told Gehazi that everything was all right, but when she came to Elisha, she bowed down before him and took hold of his feet. Gehazi was about to push her away, but Elisha said,
"Leave her alone. Can't you see that she's deeply distressed? And the Lord has not said a thing to me about it."
The woman said to him,
"Sir, did I ask you for a son? Didn't I tell you not to raise my hopes?"
Elisha turned to Gehazi and said,
"Here, take my stick and go. Don't stop to greet anyone you meet. And if anyone greets you, you don't take time to answer. Go straight to the house and hold my stick over the boy."
So the two of them started back together. Gehazi went on ahead and held Elisha's stick over the child, but there was no sound or any other sign of life. So he went back to meet Elisha.
The boy didn't wake up.
When Elisha arrived, he went alone into the room and saw the boy lying dead on the bed. He closed the door and prayed to the Lord. Then he lay down on the boy and placing his mouth, eyes and hands on the boy's mouth, eyes and hands. As he lay stretched out over the boy's body started to get warm. Elisha got up, walked about the room, and then went back again and stretched himself over the boy. The boy sneezed 7 times and then opened his eyes. Elisha called Gehazi and told him to call the boy's mother. When she came in, he said to her,
"Here is your son."
She fell at Elisha's feet with her face touching the ground. Then she took her son and left. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Thank you so much, everyone.
Splendid. That was the most slow and dignified death I've ever seen. Not to mention the slowest sneeze I've ever seen. So then, here we are in this series about women in the Bible. And I just wonder, what is it that has stood out for you over these last 2 or 3 weeks? We were just saying in the vestry beforehand, I think this is the second time this year I've managed to be here for 3 consecutive weeks. So 3 consecutive weeks. Actually, I've sat there and really valued the sermons that we've had the last couple of weeks looking at these women in the Bible. So do you remember we've looked so far at Ruth and at Naomi and at Hannah? And I don't know, have we still got the roving mic somewhere, Ruth? Who are you? Sue? I just wonder if you are awake enough and can remember enough from the last couple of weeks, anything that struck you particularly, perhaps especially about the characteristics that we've seen in these women. Can anybody remember anything that we've learned over the last 3 weeks? Yes, Margaret.
I think the one phrase that Andy used when he preaching was that Ruth surrendered and that we should surrender to Jesus, because Ruth gave everything that she had to follow Naomi. I just think that's really important.
Great. Thank you very much, Margaret. Anybody else remember anything? Yep, one here. Thank you.
I've said something miraculous in the life of Ruth. She said, "Your God will be my God." It's challenging. Can anybody say concerning me that my God will be his or our God?
Thank you very much. Thank you.
It's not so much about that. It's just the fact that we're talking about the women in the Bible.
Uh-huh.
And that they did have a part to play woo! In everything.
Good. Thank you very much, Frank. Anybody else? We've all been asleep for the last 3 weeks. Splendid. Or not here. Or not here. I'll let you off. Good. So Ruth and Naomi and Hannah, we've talked about perseverance. We've talked about them, that commitment to God, and about other people coming to say, "Your God will be my God." Something that Frank's noticed, which I guess I have too, just that focus on women in the Bible is perhaps something that actually we don't do very often. And in some ways, that's been quite refreshing in itself. But we've seen, haven't we, about faith, we've seen about prayer, we've seen Hannah's fervent prayer in the temple, praying so hard that the priests thought she was drunk. We've seen perseverance, we've seen loyalty, all of these things from the women that we've seen over these last couple of weeks. We've seen God's purposes worked out in them and through them, often over a very long period of time. We were reflecting a bit on that last week, weren't we? So today we come to the first and only in our series, as I said, of a woman who doesn't actually have a name. As far as I can tell, we just have these verses in 2 Kings chapter 4 about her. I don't think she appears again. We don't even know what her name is. I'm not quite sure what it was that I did to Nick before he left, that he gave me the one that didn't even have a name. There we go. So we know very little about her. We know that she was wealthy. We know that she had that she was well-to-do. Some translations say that she was notable, perhaps in that sense of being wealthy. But I wonder whether you noticed anything. I asked you, didn't I, just to notice in that sort of rather unusual Bible reading that we had this morning, anything that struck you about the woman and about what she brought to the party, as it were. Yes. She was content with what she had. Thank you. That's really important, isn't it? Yeah, great. Thank you. Anything else? She was very hospitable, and that's what we're going to look at in just a moment. She went way beyond, didn't she, in terms of hospitality. Anything else? She had a deep faith. She had a deep faith. Thank you. Yeah, real deep faith. She really persevered in that, didn't she? And she just had utter faith. Yeah. Anything else? She had trust. Thank you. So she was content with what she had. She had a deep faith. She had a deep trust. And she showed this tremendous hospitality to the man of God. So, as I say, we don't know very much about her. Despite knowing that, not knowing very much, we know that she was wealthy. We do know as well that she probably wasn't the largest woman in the Bible. That's the woman of Samaria in the Gospels. The woman of Samaria. That took you a while to warm up to, didn't it? Well, Nick's gone, you see, with his bad jokes. So, you know, I thought I'd better try. So she was a wealthy woman. She provides meals for Elisha the prophet. She even builds this extra room in her house that we saw. And then she has a son, miraculously it seems, who gets sick and dies. She turns to the man of God in faith, and her son is restored when he visits. So we notice then from all of that, the faith, the contentment, the hospitality. And I want to focus especially on that thing of hospitality this morning. This woman goes above and beyond. She doesn't just provide the odd meal. She doesn't just provide a meal on a regular basis. Over a number of times, she provides a meal for Elisha. And then she goes to her husband one day and she says, "I know that this man who often comes our way is a holy man of God. Let's make a small room on the roof and put in it a bed and a table, a chair and a lamp. Then he can stay here whenever he comes." I think the first miraculous thing there is that she manages to persuade her husband that this is a good idea. She goes to him with this crackers idea, but we're not actually told what his response is, but kind of reading between the lines, I'm just going to suggest that that's fairly amazing in itself. But I also love the detail that's given here about the room that she set up. I mean, amazing, isn't it, that we know that it had a bed and a table and a chair and a lamp. If you're going to write a drama about the passage, it's really helpful to know what to put on the stage, isn't it? So, seriously, that probably shows us a couple of things. It probably is a demonstration of these people's wealth, the fact that they had the ability to put a bed and a table and a chair and a lamp in the room. And I think it's also a demonstration that this is real hospitality. This isn't just providing a bit of a corner. This is really trying to provide the very best for this holy man of God. She's going the extra mile. And another thing to notice in these first couple of verses of this passage is the way in which she says, "I am sure that this man who regularly comes our way is a holy man of God." I think there's a sense here in which she is aware that this is an invitation not just to a man to come and be in the house, but an invitation to the work of God. It's what she's wanting to do is support not just this man who wanders by on his journeys, but to support the work of God that is going on in him and through him. You could suggest that a lesson to draw from this is that you should be kind and hospitable to all clergy. But I don't think that would actually be an appropriate reading of Scripture. I think that what we can take from it is something about noticing what God is doing and supporting that, joining in with that. There's something really important about taking time each day to say, where have I seen God at work today? In which people have I noticed God today? How can I support that? How can I seek to extend God's kingdom by kind of joining in with that? So this Shunammite woman, whatever she's called, shows generous, extra mile kind of hospitality. She notices the work of God around her and she seeks to support that. So I want to just dig a little bit deeper with this theme of hospitality. Although I have to warn you that actually as I've been looking at this week and thinking around this theme of hospitality, it's actually left me with more questions and wonderings and what might happen if kind of thing than a sense of, well, we can go away and we can do this and we can do this and we can do this. So if you're somebody who likes a kind of, you know, a closed end kind of sermon, I'm afraid you're not going to get it very well this morning. But hopefully what this will do is prompt some thinking within us that might cause us to go away and think some more, to perhaps talk to each other some more around this whole theme of hospitality. Hospitality can be to those that we know and to those that we don't know. And indeed, if you do a little word search of the word hospitality in the Bible, there are several references to it in the New Testament. But specifically, we are both told to extend hospitality to strangers and to extend hospitality to each other. So in Hebrews chapter 13, we're specifically told to practice hospitality to strangers. And in 1 Peter, we're told to offer hospitality to one another, note, without grumbling, okay? Important little thing that the writer adds there, that we're to offer hospitality without grumbling. And I think there are several parables in the Gospels as well, aren't there, that indicate the importance of hospitality. You might think particularly of the parable of the great banquet, where people start to send their excuses, and the master sends out the servants into the highways and byways, that phrase that's become familiar to us, and says, compel them to come in, because actually they too are welcome. And hospitality is both given and received, isn't it? And I want you to think a little about the fact that actually there is blessing in both the giving of hospitality and the receiving of hospitality, just as there is in giving gifts as well as in receiving gifts. And remember that if you don't receive the hospitality, you are actually depriving others of the joy of giving that. As Christians and as churches, I think that probably, not always, but sometimes we can be very good at thinking that we know how to do the hospitality. It's right that we do the hospitality. That's the instructions that we've just seen in the Bible. It's the example of this woman. But actually, what if we were to work more in partnership with others? What if we were to look to receive the hospitality of others as much as we are to give it? And for some of us, that takes some humility, doesn't it? Some of us are actually far better at giving the hospitality than we are at receiving it. And we'll touch on humility in just a moment, but just an interesting little thought there. As an example, one of the things that I've been quite intentional about over the past 5 years is about building community amongst my neighbours. So I moved into a house where I knew nobody around. There's a whole variety of people living sort of either side of me and opposite me and behind me and those kind of things. And I've been quite intentional about seeking to build relationship with them and about creating community amongst them. And this week, somebody who moved in not that long ago invited me to go to her house for a cup of tea and a piece of cake. And do you know, that was actually really good. And of course, the temptation for me had been to say, oh, you must come over for a cup of tea, you know, come to my house. actually it was at least as important that she was able to say, come to my house. Because they've moved new into the area, they don't really know anybody, and actually it's important for her to be able to open her home to others. And the amount of cake that she produced indicated that she really did enjoy welcoming people into her home. There was a substantial amount of cake for us to enjoy together. And, of course, what that also did was that actually when I got there, she said, oh, Phyllis is here too. Phyllis lives next door. And so actually there was somebody else being gathered in into that sense of community. So receiving hospitality is as important as giving hospitality. And then I just want to add one final thing, which is, I think, you know, I haven't been trained as a teacher. Some of you know far more about this than I do. But I think there's a principle in teaching about how you're supposed to provide a stretch beyond the sort of normal. Is that right? That you're kind of supposed to, you know, provide an extra bit for the clever ones to think about at the end. So if you like, this is the kind of stretch at the end. But as I was thinking about this, I was thinking actually this ties into the diocesan common vision that is emerging. Now you might say, well, yes, she would say that. She works for the diocese, okay? But I don't know how much you've kind of picked up along the way, but you will know, I'm sure, that Bishop Stephen became the Bishop of Oxford almost a year ago, that he's been engaged in travelling around the diocese and listening and gathering stuff and thinking and praying. And together as a diocese, we're working towards a common vision for the next few years. And that is still an emerging thing. But the thing which I think has become pretty clear is that he's calling us to be a Christ-like diocese. Well, that's a good thing, isn't it? It's a good place to start. But in particular, he's calling us to use the three words of contemplative, compassionate, and courageous. Okay, so as a church, he wants us to be contemplative, compassionate, and courageous. Now, if that's the first time you've heard that, that might sort of spark off all sorts of questions in you. You might think, oh, diocese, whatever. I don't know what your reaction is to that. But actually, as I've lived with that over the last probably 5 months or so now, three, four, 5 months, something like that, actually, I am increasingly excited by the sense that as a church, we might be called to be contemplative, compassionate, and courageous, and to explore what all of that means in every single area of our life as a church. And as I was thinking about this thing about hospitality, I suddenly realized that actually if we are to extend real hospitality, and if we are to receive hospitality from others, I haven't quite worked out yet where the contemplative fits within that, apart from the fact that we'll pray for all that we're doing and all the rest of it. But actually, we are being compassionate to those who are in need and to those who are vulnerable. But I also want to suggest that it calls us to be courageous. Because if we are to extend real hospitality to strangers as well as to those that we know, and if we're to do it without grumbling, then actually there's something in there about being courageous in the hospitality that we extend. So contemplative, compassionate, and courageous. And just a thought then about how hospitality might need to be courageous as well as compassionate. Well, all of those, you may think, rambling thoughts about hospitality come from this Shunammite woman and from the first three verses of the 30 verses that we covered this morning. You will be glad to know that I'm not going to look at the remaining 27 verses at the same length. But just a couple of other things to notice before we move on. Having seen this woman's hospitality, I think somebody mentioned her humility. Elisha wants to know how he can repay this woman. She's extended all this extravagant hospitality to him, and he wants to know, how can I repay her? What can he do to help? Can he speak to the king on her behalf, he suggests. No, she says, she's quite happy. She's contented, we heard. She's happy, she lives among her people. There's nothing that she needs, she says. But actually, from that humility comes great blessing, because the humility that she shows gets the servant thinking. And the servant points out to Elisha that this woman has no offspring. That would have been perhaps a real distress for her, but particularly in that culture, it would have also probably been a thing of shame, because there would have been nobody to carry on the family line. And the servant spots this, and Elisha prophesies that all of that will change, and that in a year's time, she will hold a son in her arms. So from her humility comes great blessing. And finally, her faith, which we also mentioned at the beginning. Or if you want another word, another H to fit in with hospitality and humility, perhaps we could go for hope. Because biblically, faith and hope are very, very close to each other, aren't they? Hope in the Bible is not kind of, oh, I hope the sun shines tomorrow. No, hope in the Bible is something which expresses real faith about something that will happen. As a result of Elisha's perseverance to bless her, this woman conceives and has the miraculous son, who then gets very sick and who then dies in a very civilized and slow fashion. No, he doesn't. He gets sick, his head hurts, he comes home, and actually sitting on his mother's lap in the course of just probably a couple of hours, this boy dies. You can imagine how devastating that was to this woman. But the woman is single-minded in her determination to go to the man that she knows is a man of God. Maybe she's heard of him performing other miracles, which we know had already happened. Maybe she knows that she's built up such a relationship with this man over the course of these years. She's seen what a holy man he is. She just kind of has that instinct that he must be able to do something to help. But she tells no one why she's going. She's single-minded. She tells the servant not to stop or to slow down on the way. She won't accept what she perceives as being the second best in the form of a visit from Elisha's servant. No, she's single-minded. She's full of faith. She trusts in God. She trusts that God will bring about good in this situation. And her faith is rewarded. Now, I want to be a bit careful, and I haven't got time to preach a whole nother sermon on this, but I want to be a bit careful because there are all sorts of unhelpful cause and effect conclusions that we can draw from this passage. But I would be in danger of preaching another whole sermon if I tried to go there. Of course, there are times when great faith does not seem to get what is hoped for. But the focus of this series that we're in is to learn from these women of the Bible and the things that they show us. And whatever the outcome, there is no doubt that this woman's faith is a positive characteristic for us to learn from. The fact that she's so full of it, the fact that she's so single-minded in her determination to go to the man that she knows represents God and through whom she knows God works. So then, this Shunammite woman, this anonymous lady that we've spent time with this morning, we see her extravagant hospitality. We see her humility, and we see her tremendous faith. I said that maybe this was going to leave you with questions and things to ponder rather than answers. I kind of want to break into discussion groups at this point and see what else we can kind of mine out of this, but you'll probably shoot me if I tell you that that's what we're going to do next. I hope you wouldn't, actually, but anyway. Okay, so things to go away and to think about. But to think about extravagant hospitality and what might that mean. How might we extend hospitality? How might we receive hospitality in and through our individual homes and in and through our collective life as a church together? So let's pray, shall we? Father, we thank you for these godly and inspiring women that we are taking time to look at over these weeks. We thank you for their example. We thank you for the things that we've already seen in them. Their faith, their prayer, their loyalty, their surrender, their demonstration of you to other people, their trust, the hospitality and the humility of this woman that we look at this morning. Lord, as we continue to look at these women and to reflect on all that they show us about living godly lives, please would you help us to learn from them and to put that into practice. And in particular, would you show us what it means to extend hospitality to strangers and to each other? And would you help us to be creative in the way that we do that, to be compassionate and to be courageous in the way that we do that. For we ask this in Jesus' name and for the extension of God's kingdom. Amen.